Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
July 4th, 2006, the Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, 5 must-have features for the ultimate advanced amateur camera. Well, welcome to another show. It's 4th of July here in the States, Independence Day. And what that means really is beer, baseball, fireworks, and barbecue. That's right. And it has a little something to do with the America splitting off from England way back when, but mainly it's beer and barbecue and fireworks. A little bit of baseball thrown in. You got to have a little something to do in the mid-afternoon while you're waiting for the big show to start. And speaking of show, here I am doing the digital story. I've got a great topic for you today. I'm going to talk about 5 features that if you're shopping for a camera, a serious advanced amateur camera, you know, one that's really ready to accommodate you as you move into the next level of photography, as you move into being the guy that gets the killer shots every time, then you've got to have these 5 features. Before I get to that, I want to just take a little bit of time for housekeeping on the Digital Story site. Man, has it been busy, has it not? First of all, I want to just mention again, if you haven't had a chance to go see the 8 finalists in the Foto Magico Slideshow Showcase, you gotta go and check them out. It's a lot of fun. We have a lot of variety, everything from people doing basically their portfolio to telling stories to vacations, you name it. We've got it on there. And it's really a great opportunity for you to see the different types of slideshows that you can do and think about which one you're going to do. If you didn't enter one in the showcase, I'm really hoping that you will still continue to work on this project and make some slideshows yourself because, as I've said so many times before, they're just fabulous. They're just a great way to show off your work. Now, we've got a new photo assignment going for this month. We're not doing slideshows anymore, you know, in terms of the photo assignment. That was May and June. We're in a new month now. We're in July, and we're going to do something new this month. And what we're going to do, the assignment for this month is heat, heat, heat. It's the middle of summer. We got to do heat. So, you know, put on your thinking caps, get creative, and let's get some photo assignment shots coming in that somehow talk about heat. If you've never entered one of our photo assignments, then just go to the submissions page on the Digital Story. You can't miss it. Got a big old icon at the top there. And it'll tell you how to enter. And if you want to see what some of the other folks have done in the past, go to that fun little drop-down menu, that little pop-up menu in the upper right-hand corner there. Choose photo assignments, and you'll get to take a look and see what some folks have done on previous assignments. Either way, get your assignment together. Heat this month, really cool or really hot. Which is it? Well, you know, cool can be hot. But anyway, make it good. All right. So that's that. Grab shots. Fabulous. Keep it going. Love the grab shots. And I've got some good news for you. Guess what? Now that I got the slideshow out of the way, I've actually sat down. I've cleared everything else out of my mind. All the other projects, you know, kind of hanging around. And I sat down and I worked on getting the keychains out to you guys that have submitted grab shots. And I owe a couple posters too, a couple Julian Cost posters. I got the addresses for that all squared away. And it all goes out this week. So, keychains, posters, all that stuff I'm going to get caught up this week. If you submitted a grab shot and haven't gotten your keychain, which is a whole lot of you, fear not, they're on the way. Okay, let's get now to the 5 must-have features for the ultimate advanced camera. Now, this isn't, I'm not talking about cameras here. That's your pocket camera, the one that you kind of slip in your backpack when you're going out for, you know, an afternoon urban walk, or the one that you can use at the birthday party when you're just going as a guest, not as a real photographer. I'm talking about your serious camera. Now, of course, we do a lot of discussion about DSLRs, and everything that I say here applies to DSLRs too. But not DSLRs, digital SLRs, aren't for everyone. And I don't really want folks to feel like you have to have a digital SLR to take serious pictures. Now, you do need a serious camera, however, to really tackle the big assignments, to really kind of push your photography to the next level. But they can be advanced amateur cameras and not DSLRs. So even though DSLRs apply to this conversation, these cameras don't have to be DSLRs. And in fact, after I give you the five must-have features, I'm going to provide you with two cameras that I think fit this category, just so you can look at them online, kind of get an idea about what I'm talking about, and then continue to shop and look around from there. The first must-have feature is a hot shoe. You've got to have a hot shoe if you're going to do any sort of serious event photography or portrait photography. You need to be able to use an electronic flash, external flash, not the little one that pops up on the camera. That's okay for in a pickle, in a fix, a little bit of fill light. But, you know, if you're going to go do a wedding reception, you don't want to go in there with that little tinky thing on top of your camera. You need a real external flash. Now, ideally, you want to go with a camera brand that also has dedicated flash cord, so that you can connect a cord from the hot shoe on the camera to the flash and get the flash even farther off the camera. Either way, you gotta have a hot shoe. Don't consider a serious camera that doesn't have one. Second thing, RAW format. Now, this is becoming a little bit more difficult than it used to be. It used to be that any semi-serious advanced camera had RAW format, but then the prices on digital SLRs started to drop a little bit, and so camera manufacturers are going, you know what, we really want people to buy our DSLRs, and RAW file format's one of the ways we're going to get them to do it. So suddenly, cameras that used to have RAW format don't have them anymore. So you really got to pay attention now. RAW is important for your serious camera, because it gives you so many options later on. If you miss the white balance, when you're doing the shoot, you can easily fix it later on and not have to worry about hurting your image, degrading your image. You can get more resolution. It's the ultimate file format for serious photography. We're talking about serious cameras. So even though you have to work a little harder now to find a camera that isn't a digital SLR with RAW format, you got to do it. It's a very important feature to have. The next thing, fast lens. Okay. You need a lens that has a nice big maximum aperture. Now, I like F2. That's my favorite. It's rare in an advanced amateur camera that you'll get something brighter than F2. But F2 is what I like. A lot of times, though, as I look at these zooms that are on these advanced amateur cameras, F2.4 seems to be about as bright as you can get. That's all right. F2.4 is, you can do a lot of damage with F2.4. But don't settle for a camera that has a maximum aperture of F3.5 or F4. You're not going to be happy. You need a nice, bright lens, a nice, good optical zoom, and try to get something at F2 or F2.4. While we're hanging around the old lens, then I want to mention number four, which is a filter ring. A filter ring, very simple thing. It's threads on the end of a barrel, right? But what it allows you to do, it allows you to screw in close-up lenses. It allows you to screw in filters. It allows you to screw in a polarizer. It gives you all sorts of options, all sorts of ways to modify your photography, ways to protect your lens when you're working, you know, out in the field. If you don't want your lens just bare at a, let's say at a wedding reception where you could get sprayed by champagne, people could bump it, drinks could get spilled. You know, all sorts of things could happen. You want that front glass of your cherished lens protected with a like a nice clear UV filter or a skylight filter, and having a filter ring that allows you to screw in filters to either protect it or to modify your picture, such as a polarizing filter, is very important. It's a simple thing. I don't understand why almost all cameras don't allow for filter rings, other than the very super compacts that don't have any room for them. Look for a filter ring and make sure that it's part of the feature list for your serious camera. Number five on our hit parade is a remote release. Again, a very simple thing, much in the way that a filter ring is a very simple thing, but a very important thing. A remote release allows you to trigger the camera without pressing the shutter button. Now, it's true in a jam you can use a self-timer, but a self-timer always has a delay. A remote release gives you, you know, that releases the shutter right away. When you press the button on the remote release, you can trip the shutter and not shake the camera. It's very handy to have, and it's very important when you're doing long exposures with your camera on a tripod, or if you need to be off to the side of the camera. There's all sorts of situations where a remote release allows you to get the shot that would be very difficult otherwise. I got to put it on my top five list. Now, there are all sorts of other things that are important. You know, how good is the movie mode? How high does the ISO go? All sorts of things like that. And that's what I consider getting into your personal preference area. The five things that I listed are really pretty much must-have things. And then you sort of say, then you start to go, well, what do I want in addition to those things? Now, I'm going to give you two cameras right now that are good starting points, and if you're shopping for a serious camera, your serious camera, then you should take a look at these two in addition to your favorite digital SLRs. The first one is the Canon PowerShot Pro 1. The Canon PowerShot Pro 1. It's an 8-megapixel camera. It has a 28 to 200 millimeter lens, and it's f2.4 to 3.5, which means that at the wide range, around 28, 35, maybe even up to 50, not always, you have a fast f2.4. And then as you get into the telephoto range, then the lens is maximum aperture 3.5. Not the fastest lens in the world, but fast enough. It has a 2-inch monitor, 2-inch LCD monitor, but what's really nice about the Canon is that it's a vari-angle monitor, which means, you know, you can pull it out and you can have it at all sorts of different angles, which means you can put the camera on the ground and have the monitor pointing up, so you don't have to get down on your belly to look through the viewfinder, or you can hold the camera way over your head and have the monitor pointing down and take those crowd shots at a parade. Get your arms up and get the shot up over everyone else's head looking through the monitor. So very angle monitors come in very handy, and they're very useful to have. It does have RAW mode. Need I say more? Now, the ISO on this camera only goes up to 400, which is a little surprising, but it's a pretty good 400. Sometimes on other cameras, the ISOs will go up much higher, but they're not really usable. This one does go up to 400, and it is pretty usable. It does have a remote release, and it does have a self-timer that allows you to set at 2 or 10 seconds, which means if you don't feel like using the remote release and you're just trying to not shake your camera when it's on the tripod, you can set the self-timer to 2 seconds. Very handy. The PowerShot Pro 1 takes CF cards, compact flash cards, which I prefer, and they're very affordable and very easy to find. It's a terrific camera. It's not too big. It fits in your hand nicely, but it also fits in your jacket pocket nicely. So you got a lot of camera in a very compact package, and you don't have to worry about carting around a bunch of extra stuff. Now, it does accept all the Canon flashes and the Canon flash accessories. So you really can do things such as have two or three flashes set up and have your power shot trigger them for like portrait situations. You can use a dedicated cord and put it on a bracket. You have a lot of options with your flashes with this camera. And I seen it on the street for around $750 to $800. That's a lot of money. But you know, you're going after a very serious camera, and you don't have to buy the additional lens and so forth. And it does have the pop-up flash, for everyday use when you're not on serious assignment. So about $750 for an 8-megapixel camera that has basically every feature that you would need for a serious assignment. Now, I took a look at the latest Nikon page, and it's interesting what they're doing. They're really splitting their camera lineup into two distinct categories, digital SLRs, some of which are quite affordable, and then their compact cameras, and they're not really doing this advanced amateur camera, at least as it fits my criteria. So I couldn't really find anything in the Nikon lineup that's current that I wanted to recommend. However, I did find a very nice camera over in the Sony lineup, in the Sony DSC-R1. That's DSC-R1. Sony loves these, you know, really complicated names. But this is a pretty slick camera, and I saw it actually demoed at PMA back in February, and I was pretty impressed. So this is a 10.3 megapixel camera, so you have a little bit more resolution. And the lens is a 24 to 120 millimeter lens. So it's a little bit wider than the Canon, which I think is very nice on a compact camera. Now, you don't have as much zoom on the long end. It only goes to 120 millimeters instead of 200 millimeters like the Canon does, but you do have a wider field of view at 24 millimeters, something to keep in mind depending on what kind of photographer you are. And especially if you're going to be shooting in a lot of tight spaces at events and so forth, that 24 millimeter lens could come in really handy. At maximum aperture, it's about the same as the Canon, is the f2.4. However, as you zoom out, maximum aperture at the telephoto end is only 4.8, whereas the Canon, all the way out to the 200 millimeter end, which is a lot longer than the Sony, that only goes 120 millimeter, the Canon is f3.5. So it has a brighter lens all the way through the zooming range than the Sony. Now, the Sony also has a 2-inch LCD monitor, and it's quite nice, but its ISO goes up to 3200 instead of just 400 on the Canon. Now, there's not too many shots I can tell you right now you're going to want to shoot at ISO 3200 on this camera, but it can go up there, and you can push it up, you know, to around 800. I'm not even so sure about 1600, but 800 for sure, and get some pretty decent results. So at any rate, that sort of depends on your taste, right? So the fact of the matter is you can go up to 3200 on the Sony and 400 on the Canon. Now, the Sony only has a 10-second self-timer, not a 2-second, but I believe it does have a remote release, which is, you know, just vital to, these certain types of photography, but only a 10-second self-timer built in, and it does have RAW mode. Okay, so this is, again, very important, looking for these cameras that have RAW for our serious shooters. Now, it comes in a little bit more expensive than the Canon. It comes in at $900 or so compared to $750. Obviously, if you shop around, you can probably find, different prices for each of them. But I think overall, you'll probably pay a little bit more for the Sony, the DSC-R1, than you will for the Canon PowerShot Pro 1. It's a But, you know, you do get a little bit more resolution. You get 10.3 megapixels, and you do get a little wider end on the lens, and you do have ISOs that go up higher. So these are two cameras that will give you a pretty good feel for what I consider a serious amateur, advanced amateur camera that's capable of doing pro assignments. The Sony, the flash system isn't as good as Canon's flash system, but it does have a dedicated hot shoe, which is really important. And it also uses memory sticks and memory stick pros, which I'm not as crazy about as I am compact flash. But at the end of the day, you know, it's either way, it's memory, right? So I wouldn't make my final buying decision on whether a camera had a memory stick or a compact flash card. So, but these aren't the only two cameras that fit, you know, this profile. And so, but I did want to give you two cameras so that you could get a feel and study them and then start to look around and see what other cameras might fit the bill for you. You know, take a look at the Olympus line, for example, see what Panasonic is doing. You know, there's a lot of good stuff out there right now. You know, Kodak, you know, I haven't checked out Kodak lately. Their compacts I have because the compacts are very popular, but I haven't checked out their high-end lately. So you might want to see what Kodak is up to these days. And just take a look and see if you can find something that meets my, you know, my must-have five, and then sort of figure out from there, you know, the other things that are important to you and the things that aren't as important to you. And I think you'll come out with a very, very nice camera. Now, even if you already have a digital SLR, there might be times when you want this advanced amateur camera, you know, for assignments where you got to go really compact and you don't want to schlep around, you know, all of your DSLR gear, but yet you need a lot of, you know, capability. And that could be the ticket. Now, you're going to pay for it, right? I mean, that's a luxury. You know, you're going to pay an extra $750, up to $900 for that luxury. But for some people, it just might be worth it. Okay, so there we go. So now I've sort of egged on a little virtual window shopping for you. But it is, you know, I have to say, I haven't bought a new camera in this range for a while, but I do like to keep up and I do like to keep my eye on things. And even if you're not going to be the one that buys a camera yourself, you know, you're probably the camera guru in your world, in your group, and people are going to ask you, hey, what should I get? You know, what do you like? And, you know, it's good to be up. It's good to know what's going on because then you can give good advice and help people buy cameras. And then once they do, then you can play with them and, you know, vicariously, you know, you know, well, I didn't have to buy it, but I still get to, you know, shoot some shots with it. Okay, so enough of that for now. I'll list some links and stuff on the show notes so you can go take a look at these things and nose around a little bit. Those of you that are in the States, I hope you have a great Independence Day, a great holiday. Be careful with those fireworks. Try to get some good shots. Probably you probably won't hear this before the actual fireworks display. If you happen to pick it up in the morning, the show in the morning, I do have a post on the digital story about how to shoot fireworks, and that's what it's called. So you might want to take a look at it. And just by way of reminder, there's a lot of things that I write about on the site that I don't cover in the podcast. I post on the site almost every day. So if you don't go over there regularly, I advise it because I got a lot of good stuff there. All right. I hope you enjoyed the show. I will see you next week. Have fun with your photography and go take a bunch of great shots. Bye-bye.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.